this is your Polycast for Tuesday, February 21st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the House votes to lift the ban on Sunday liquor sales, and Republicans take aim at the Metropolitan Council. Minnesota lawmakers have taken a big step toward lifting the state's longtime ban on Sunday liquor store sales. With relatively little debate, the House passed the Sunday sales legislation yesterday on a convincing 85-45 vote. It's a major shift for the perennial issue that had failed year after year at the Capitol, often by wide margins. Tim Pugmire has more.
This was the first time the Minnesota House voted on Sunday liquor sales as a standalone bill. Previous efforts were pushed unsuccessfully as last-minute amendments to larger bills on liquor policy. A House amendment failed last session by 14 votes. Republican Representative Jennifer Loon of Eden Prairie, the bill's chief sponsor, said it's time to put the state on par with its neighboring states.
We are losing business across our borders every Sunday as Minnesotans leave our state lines to purchase something maybe they forgot or ran out of or just didn't have time to do during the week. And I'd like Minnesota retailers to be able to have that business and to keep those tax revenues here at home.
Supporters say their cause was helped this year by an influx of new legislators as well as by some changed minds among veterans. DFL Representative Ray Dean of Minneapolis was one of those switched votes.
I have received lots of emails from constituents asking me to support this, and I believe that this year we've gotten to a place that it looks like we're going to be able to move this bill forward, and so I will be responsive to the constituents.
Under the House bill, liquor stores would have the option of opening on Sundays between the hours of 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. In response to concerns raised by the Teamsters Union, the bill also prohibits product deliveries to liquor stores on Sundays. But opponents remain convinced the change will hurt small businesses with an additional day of staffing costs. They argue that liquor sales won't increase, but simply be spread out over 7 days rather than six. DFL Representative John Considine of Mankato said all the small liquor stores in his area oppose Sunday sales.
I feel a duty to protect Minnesota businesses and small businesses. If we do not start protecting them, they are going to disappear.
Republican Representative Glenn Grunhagen of Glencoe opposed the bill on moral grounds.
It's a libertine type of freedom that, in my opinion, will only end in bondage and negative consequences to many people when we legalize access to some of these products that have extremely negative consequences.
The debate now shifts to the state Senate, where the bill's prospects remain unclear. A Senate Commerce Committee hearing is scheduled Wednesday on a slightly different Sunday sales bill. The Senate version would limit liquor store hours to 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sundays. It also prevents liquor wholesalers from soliciting orders or merchandising on Sundays. Republican Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said the House passage turns up the heat on the Senate. Gazelka said he expects the bill will reach the full Senate, and he doesn't plan to delay action.
I think if the votes are there, I would prefer it was done sooner than later. I'd rather get this discussion off the table if the votes are there so that we can work on things like passing a budget.
DFL Governor Mark Dayton isn't a Sunday sales advocate, but he has said he won't veto the measure if it reaches his desk. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Republican lawmakers have teed up a host of measures challenging the Metropolitan Council, with plans to restructure it, hem in its planning power, and roll back one of its signature projects, the $1.9 billion Southwest Light Rail Transit Project. Tim Nelson has the story.
Republicans took on the Regional Planning and Transit Authority on a broad front at the Capitol. Lead among them was State Senator David Ozmek, author of a resolution asking the federal government to deny more than $900 million in matching funds already pledged to Southwest.
Today, the Minnesota State Senate took the first step in preventing a $2 billion taxpayer boondoggle from being rammed down the throats of Minnesotans by an unelected, unaccountable group of Metro liberals.
Ozmek, who also said that he was planning a run for governor, said the legislature would ask for the money to be granted to Minnesota for road and bridge projects instead and become a model of federal aid for traditional transportation. And that was just one of the measures teed up by Republicans taking on the 17-member council that handles wastewater treatment, transit, planning, and some affordable housing matters across the 7-county Twin Cities area. One bill would abolish the existing council and replace it with a 27-member panel, most of them elected city and county officials. The governor currently appoints 16 district representatives and the council chair. Dakota County Commissioner and former GOP legislator Chris Gerlach said it was simply a too powerful arm of the state.
That's how it's run. You have certainly have a group of very capable and good public servants on the Met Council to handle a lot of day-to-day things, but the big questions and the big issues are controlled from the executive branch and the governor's office with complete control over that appointment process.
But doubters said they didn't think that local officials like mayors or county commissioners could put aside parochial concerns and think regionally if they made up most of the council. Jim Hovland is the mayor of Edina.
Do you really want to put local elected officials and county officials in a position where they're both the regulator and potentially the regulated, and what kind of conflicts of interest could that create?
Others questioned whether having one representative from a small county like Scott and one from a much larger county like Hennepin would appropriately distribute regional authority. There were other challenges to the council at the Capitol as well, including a proposal that would make transit users share a much bigger proportion of the costs of their ride. They currently pay about 25% for local bus service. A bill authored by Representative Mark Uglum of Champlin would set that goal at 80%. Transit advocates told lawmakers that was unrealistic and would hurt people who would need transit the most. Another bill would shift operating costs of light rail projects to local governments. Linda Runbeck, a Republican representative from Circle Pines, would block any light rail projects without express approval by the legislature, which Southwest doesn't have.
It's a project that has failed on so many counts to be developed in a thorough, neutral, a public way that people have had an opportunity to weigh in on.
Met Council Chair Adam Dunnock said he appreciated that legislators were engaged with the Met Council's agenda. He also said he welcomed a discussion at the Capitol about how the Met Council might be restructured and how it handles things like regional transit, affordable housing, and other issues. But Dunnock said he wasn't sure that's what lawmakers intended.
If some of the legislative proposals are just an attempt to undermine the council or shortchange our funding sources or other things of that nature, that's a non-starter for me and for the council.
Governor Dayton said in a statement he was also willing to discuss changes, but called some of them drastic and said he wasn't sure if they were justified. Covering politics, I'm Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Some new allegations have surfaced about the juvenile facility in northern Minnesota that closed last year. St. Louis County has just completed a 16-month investigation into Mesabi Academy, and it found multiple instances of maltreatment, including that a staffer allowed residents to fight there. As Tom Scheck reports, Governor Dayton is looking to change the way facilities like Mesabi Academy are overseen.
The county released documents this month that reveal what boys have said for months. A staffer at the facility in Buell allowed boys as young as 12 to fight. When Xavier Hudson was released last May, he and his mom, Sue Blood, talked about it.
And that's what happened. He said they took him into a room without any cameras.
Yeah, the boardroom.
The boardroom?
Yeah.
Hudson was 12 at the time. He was one of several boys at Mesabi to say staff allowed fighting. St. Louis County documents confirmed those statements. One document said, quote, as long as youth wanted to fight, staff was fine with it. Another maltreatment determination said a staffer slept in the gym while kids fought. Another said a staffer walked away after witnessing one boy punch another boy in the face. Hudson says one employee encouraged fighting so much that boys called it a fight club.
If he didn't like a kid, he don't want them to fight you.
It isn't certain what happened to the alleged staffers, since privacy laws prevent the county from releasing names. One public document said a staffer who allowed fighting was fired before the facility closed. In all, St. Louis County determined maltreatment occurred 5 times at Mesabi Academy between October 2015 and the facility's closure last summer. The other findings include a staffer breaking a boy's clavicle and using unsafe restraint procedures. 2 earlier maltreatment determinations involving the use of handcuffs were reversed after staffers appealed. The investigation appears to be too little, too late. Mesabi Academy closed last summer after APM reports revealed significant problems involving physical and sexual abuse, poor staff training, and improper oversight. In its final set of documents, the county determined staffers are responsible for the maltreatment, not Mesabi Academy. But as a result of the investigation, the State Department of Corrections found that the facility had committed 5 licensing violations. But since Mesabi is closed, all the corrections department could do is encourage Kids Peace executives to improve staff training and oversight at its facilities in other states. The staffers involved in the maltreatment may also have a tougher time getting jobs working with juveniles again. A spokesman for Mesabi Academy's parent company, Kids Peace, released a statement saying the lack of findings against the company confirms it provided an appropriate level of care. But some parents disagree. A lawyer representing 3 families that placed children at Mesabi has notified Kids Peace that he intends to sue. Jacob Raton said his clients are suing for negligence and assault and battery.
They need the best of what our society can give them. And the reality was Kids Peace was, from the accounts that we have learned, the exact opposite of that.
A spokesman for Kids Peace said the company doesn't speculate on possible litigation. Meanwhile, Governor Dayton's administration is taking steps to improve the oversight of facilities like Mesabi. Currently, problems at regional treatment centers licensed by the Department of Corrections are investigated by counties. In his budget, Dayton wants to shift that responsibility to the State Department of Human Services. Human Services Commissioner Emily Piper says the change will make oversight more consistent.
We are a more independent investigator of maltreatment claims for these kids than perhaps counties who are also duly responsible for placing children, sometimes really challenging children, into these facilities.
The future of the building that housed Mesabi Academy is also in doubt. Kids Peace terminated its lease with the city of Buell in January, and the city has not found a new tenant. For APM Reports, I'm Tom Scheck.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.